Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam. I am your host, Brother Jihad Muhammad. And tonight we have a very, very, very special show. Let me give you a little bit of something to go on so that you can really see where we're going tonight. I want to first give thanks and honor and praise to Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, for leaving with us the master architect, the one who has the master blueprint for our salvation, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I can never thank Allah enough for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Thank you, Brother Minister. Thank you for all that you do and all that you continue to do. Having said that, I want to give a shout-out to my minister down in Atlanta, Georgia, Minister Abdul Sharif Muhammad, who I know this conversation tonight is close to his heart, and I'm hoping to get him on the air about this conversation as well. We have an epidemic in our community, and the epidemic in our community is the loss of our youth. And tonight we have on the line, we have two brothers that we're going to be dealing with tonight. We're going inside the state of Alabama. And on the line we have two very precious and valuable brothers, helpers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the state. We'll be dealing with incarceration. The title tonight is Black America on Lockdown. So tonight we have two brothers, one dealing from the side of the law perspective and the other one dealing from the side of reform, although both of them are student ministers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. We also have Boots on the Ground. That is a report, a live report coming to you from certain cities around the country. Each week, by the help of Allah, we will give you a boots on the ground report, blow by blow, on what's happening in certain communities around the country. But before we go to our boots on the ground report, let me introduce two most valuable men in the work of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam down in the state of Alabama. Brother Maurice Muhammad, are you on the line?
I am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. Brother James, are you on the line, sir?
Yes, sir, I am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, brothers. I want to thank both you brothers for coming on the line tonight. We're going to be going into the state of Alabama tonight and the crisis that is taking place down in the state of Alabama tonight. But first, Brother Maurice, tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
Well, brothers, first of all, I'm honored to be on your show, and thank you, Brother Jihad. And I want to definitely thank Allah who appeared to me and up in the person of Master Farad Muhammad and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and our leader, teacher, and guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I greet my brothers and sisters in peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam.
I'm a brother from Birmingham, Alabama, came into the nation in 1993 via Nashville, Tennessee, via Birmingham. And from there, I was blessed and fortunate to attend law school at Miles Law School here in Birmingham. And in 1996, I was appointed municipal court magistrate in the city of Birmingham and have been there since. And have held several positions in the municipal court realm of magistrating. I was domestic violence liaison. But one of the most proud accolades that I must say that I am a student minister of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I had an assignment in Montgomery, one in Tuscaloosa, and now working out of the city of Birmingham, just in the ranks and with the brotherhood, and it's a beautiful thing.
All praise is due to Allah. Thank you, brother. Brother James, tell us a little bit about yourself, brother, sir, student prison reform minister.
Yes, sir. As Brother, mine is not as glorious as Brother Maurice's. I came in the nation in 1996. I got registered as a foot soldier and officer, and then in the year 2000, They needed someone to start going to the prisons in the state of Alabama. And I started going actually as an officer, just trying to train the men up with some message to the black man. Later, about 2003, became the student minister over the prison reform department. And I've been in that department now 11 years, and December will be 12 years. And at one point in the nation, at one point in Alabama, we were reaching somewhere around 5,000 inmates a month coming out to hear the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad for about 3-4 years. Then they started moving people around, trying to hand out progress. But now as we're rebuilding, we're still reaching around 3,400 a month coming out to hear the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And inshallah, by the end of the year, or by Savior's Day, we'll be back at 5,000 and better in the state of Alabama, reaching that many people with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Hopefully, inshallah, that'll work and manifest itself with some help.
Beautiful, beautiful. All praise is due to Allah. Both of you brothers are valued treasures of Allah and His messenger, brother. I really mean that. I've gotten to know both of you in a short period of time, and you both are doing are just outstanding soldiers of the fruit of Islam, and I commend you both. And that's why I wanted you on the air tonight to really talk about the issues of the state of Alabama as it deals with incarceration, as it deals with lockdown. This subject, brothers and sisters who are on the line, lockdown, Black America on lockdown, this is going to be in phases, because we're starting with incarceration, but you will see how the lockdown extends into domestic violence. It extends into divorce rate, single-parent homes. It extends into lack of education, opportunities, unemployment. So we're starting right here tonight with our two brothers, soldiers on the front line down in Alabama. Brother Vernon, do we have anybody out there for on the boots on the ground report?
Yes, sir, we do. We have one caller from the 314 area code. You want me to bring him in now?
Yes, sir. That's boots on the ground in St. Louis, I believe.
All right, yes. 314 area code. Your mic is hot. Introduce
314,
yes, sir, this is Brother Gene X. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, soldier. How you doing, black man?
By the grace of Allah, sir, I'm doing fine, sir.
I know you got boots on the ground down there in St. Louis. Give us a little something. What's going on out there in the mighty St. Louis?
Well, what's going on, brother? We're out boots on the ground. We don't just go on Mondays. We go on three nights a week, and the people in the neighborhoods are very receptive, and it just seems to me that they've just been waiting for the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we get such a warm welcome, and people have asked us to come into their homes and so ecstatic to see us in the community. I mean, it's overwhelming.
All praise is due to Allah. Let me ask you a question. Since the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taken the soldiers out on the front line, what are some of the responses from your civic groups, your pastors, and things of that nature?
Well, from the civic group, the city governments and the city councilmen, they appreciate what we're doing, and they give a thumbs up on what we're doing, and we remind them that we are out to try to help them cure some of the violence in the community. So they really, really welcome us and appreciate very much what we're doing in the community. And not only that, it has really, really increased the momentum within the mosque. Our final call sales were going to areas of the city of St. Louis that has never been touched. South City, St. Louis, never been touched. And we're just getting warm welcomes from every place that we go.
Well, brother, you don't have to answer this, soldier, but in case you do, just give the brothers a little tease. How many bullets are you getting off a week of the final calls?
I average about 300, sir, by the grace of Allah. I average about 300, and I've been in St. Louis, relocated from Atlanta, Georgia, mosque number 15, and came to St. Louis back in May. And since I've been in St. Louis, I haven't, you know, I feel very unbalanced when I'm not out saving a life with a final newspaper.
Come on, soldier. That's what I'm right. talking about. Well, thank you, brother, for that report. And keep and Brother Vernon, you can keep his mic open because Brother Gene is going to be chime in when he can on some of this conversation. Do we have anybody else out there? Thank you, Brother Gene. Do we have another boots on the ground out there anywhere?
Yes, sir. There is another one from the 678 area code, 678-78768. Your mic is live. Caller from 678-768.
Yes, sir.
Is that Brother George?
Yes, sir.
Oh, brother, let me introduce my brother to the world real quick. This here, brother, is one of the number one, if not the number one, fishermen in Atlanta, Georgia. I came in Atlanta, Georgia 17 plus years ago, and everybody that has come to the mosque that came from the streets of Atlanta, Brother George, whether it be male or female, was responsible for bringing them to the mosque. He is the number one fisherman in that city, and you can catch him out on the block any time of the day of the week, Five Points and other areas in Atlanta, Georgia. This brother is truly boots on the ground. What you got, Brother George?
Well, sir, first of all, I'd like to say, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is His exalted Christ, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is their apostle in our midst. Just like to say that since we've been blessed in following the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan via our regional representative, our regional representative, Minister Abdul Sharif Muhammad. We've been going into different parts of Atlanta, and in mainly the most crime-ridden areas in Atlanta. The first place that we went was the place in Atlanta that the police said was the worst area in Atlanta, which was an area near the Low Drive and Camelton Road. In a particular area that the police did not want to go themselves. But from that particular area and from that time all the way to now, each for about 10 different areas, all 10 routes on all 10 times that we were blessed to go out, I was blessed to be on that mission. So, but when we got to the people surprised us. We expected the people to come out and we expected the people to receive us, but the reception from the downtrodden, from the ones who we might feel may not care, maybe the dope dealers and all of them, it was as though they saw Jesus when they saw us. One brother, I don't know what his particular mode was. He was out on the block. He said when he saw us coming, tears welled up in his eyes. And this was a hardcore soldier. This was not one of those milquetoast type soldiers.
Come on.
This was a hardcore young brother. And he said when he saw us coming, tears welled up in his eyes.
Mm.
So, and we've been crisscrossing Atlanta from what we call Metropolitan and Cleveland Avenue back to University, going back to through Mechanics, near Mechanicsville on Camelton Road, and we've been just crisscrossing different areas. And now we're beginning to move deeper into the hearts of our brothers and sisters who are showing us nothing but love.
Right.
No complaints.
Beautiful.
Nothing but love.
Beautiful. Beautiful, brother. Well, brother, thank you, Brother George, for that report. Do you want to hang around tonight and chime in on some of the conversation?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then, Brother Vernon, you can keep him open as well. I'm not going to be asking questions for a minute because once we get started, I really want to hear from Brother James and Brother Maurice on this issue that we're going to be dealing with, Black America on lockdown. Do we have another report out there, Brother Vernon, or boots on the ground anywhere?
There are actually quite a few calls that have come in from several different area codes.
There's a 501 that I'm looking for.
Right, we don't have a 501 area code. We got a 404 area code, and we have different calls from 706 area code.
Oh, okay, that's not it. That's not it. Well, I'm looking for a Brother Reginald out in New York City, 501 area code. He's got boots on the ground coming out of New York and New Jersey. But anyway, we'll take questions in a minute. But right now, let us get to the meat of why we're here tonight. Black America on lockdown. My sister, who is the protocol and program director, has done a research for the show tonight on the incarceration rate of Black America. And listen to some of these stats, beloved. State prison, as of December of 2011, 846,000 state prison. Now, mind you that we have 41 million Black people in the U.S., 18,583,000 are Black men. Out of that 18 million, you got 846,000 state prison. Federal prison as of 2011 was 206,968. Local and county jails, 748,728. Now, let's go to Brother Maurice real quick. Brother Maurice, how did we get to this point? What is going on in Alabama with the laws, with the incarceration rate? What is going on? What is the percentages that you're seeing right there in the state of Alabama?
Well, dear brother, you know, that question can take us back to one of the first points of freedom of Black men and women in Alabama right after slavery. If you note that the Constitution of Alabama has not been codified, ratified, or even dealt with since 1801. So on book, we are still in the slave realm. And a lot of the laws, when we're filling out applications today, you see crime. When you see an area, have you ever been convicted of a crime of moral turpitude? Or now they're slick with their language. They say, have you ever been arrested? Besides a conviction, and the conviction could be set aside, but you could still penalize the person for just asking them, have they ever been arrested for that? So a lot of our ills have been systemic. It is definitely a systematic breakdown that Black men and women have been disenfranchised, because now in the 1801 Constitution, it gives a list of offenses that a man could offend and could commit, and his voter rights, and he could be incarcerated. And if you note, in the state of Alabama, I don't know about Georgia, but in the state of Alabama, when you are given time, you are not convicted of two time, you are convicted to a term of hard labor. So if you're doing 20 years, you are convicted to a term of 20 years of hard labor, not 20 years of time, but 20 years of hard labor. So in that point, what I'm saying is that in the Constitution, they lifted charges. And if you could listen to a few of the charges: disorderly conduct, public intoxication, public lewdness, crimes like that, were those types of crime, truancy, where your children would be out of school, you're hanging out, and they just basically loitering They would basically just pick you up. If the three or four of you gathered, they'd pick you up and say, well, you know, what are you doing? Are you working? Are you doing this? Well, if not, you're coming to jail. And brothers didn't have money for no defense attorneys, so we would cop out a plea, and they would give them a term of a certain amount of time in jail for simply being a black man on the street. And so it has now graduated unto a point now where that culture now has been adopted somewhat in the black culture as norm. So now we are now feeding into a culture or a subculture that it is normal for black men to go to jail. If a black man does not go to jail, then we need to question his manhood. So those are the type of things that we have to work on and that we are dealing with from a systemic perspective of breaking down what is happening with our black men. It is not, brothers, and I submit to all of the brothers and sisters who are listening, it's not an event, dear brothers and sisters. This is a process that we have undergone and that has been bestowed upon us, not by ourselves, but by others than ourselves. But what we have to do now is work on the process to bring us back to the mindset that we don't accept it. See, when we are not accepting jail terms, when we're not accepting that activity that would render jail terms and say, well, you know, that's being black or acting black, then and only then we'll be able to turn this around.
Beautiful. Okay. Brother Student Minister James, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Brother, let me ask you a question. The prison system, what is the incarceration rate of black men in the state of Alabama? Do you have any statistics on that fact?
No, sir, not in front of me, but right now I do know that in the state of Alabama, September 1st, there's 31,012 inmates, male and female, not counting youth offenders in the state of Alabama, and 56% of them are black males. Only 6% of them are black females, and the rest are either white or Hispanic or something like that. So 56% in Alabama fills the prison of black males, and 6% are black women in the state of Alabama.
Wow. Well, here's another alarming statistic. Not only do we have a high incarceration rate, but we have a high rate of those that are tied to the penal system. According to the statistics I have here, black men on parole, 1,937,000 that are tied to parole. So here's the people, you're just not in prison, but you're still tied. They still got a rope around you that they can get their hands on you and control you and deny you certain rights as regular citizens. Do you know what the parole rate is in the state of Alabama? Does anybody know?
No, I don't know.
You're right. How many black men and women are on parole in the state of Alabama?
No, sir, I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
Okay. Brother Maurice, let me ask you a question. Oh boy, this is terrible. Let me ask, what is the percentage right now? How has the rate increased from one decade to the next in the state of Alabama with incarceration?
Well, the incarceration rate, dear brother, especially coming from the 80s into the 90s when we went into the drug war era, it went up way over 50% to 60%. And now what is happening now, we are starting to make a decline because most of the brothers, and this is one of the problems that we're suffering, especially in the state of Alabama, one of the problems that we're suffering is recidivism. So you know, at one point in the prison system, we had about 87% of the inmates who were in the Alabama state prison system, this was their second or third offense. So they were as one judge coined it, they were breakbacks. They were breaking back into jail because of disenfranchisement and because of the fact that a lot of brothers have their first conviction, and they'll offer them a plea and give them probation, but then when they hit the road and they hit the streets, they can't get jobs because of the conviction. You're free in body, but not necessarily free indeed. You don't have the freedoms to even gain a college education, because if you are convicted of a felony in Alabama, it is difficult, if not impossible, for you to get financial aid to go to college or to go to a secondary level of education. So a lot of times, even with the brothers who have certifications, if you are state certified, then you cannot be state certified. They will, what they call you, that you will become unfit to be certified in the state of Alabama. So if you have a felony, you have to go before a fitness board to guarantee or to talk to them about your fitness to hold that certification. So it becomes a very, very strong ball and chain, that felony conviction. And it is so easy to come by because our young people, a lot of times they catch them when they are young. They catch them when they're 17 and 18 years old and say a lot of brothers are paying at 30 and 35 and 40 for what they did when they were 18 and 19. And then we are not aware of the alternative sentencing, like things like youthful offender, deferred prosecution. We don't have, we're not privy to that. There was a situation here in Alabama a few years ago where three young white boys burned down churches in Alabama. And as of last week, two of them were released from prison, and they had been granted youthful offender upon their release. So when they're granted youthful offender, unless they are being sentenced again, you won't even find the time that they did in the state penitentiary.
Wow.
So these young men can go and be their doctor, lawyer, sales. They can go and be accountants, and we not even know the difference. The only thing they would do is change their names and change the spelling here or there and apply for a different social. And the next thing we know, they're representing some of our cousins. They're representing us. We're their patients and so on and so forth. But it's just the fact that we have to become more privy to the word and to the knowledge of what we're dealing with inside of our legal system.
Okay. You said something earlier, brother. Somebody out there saying something?
Yes, sir, brother. Okay. This is Brother James. I just wanted
yes,
to
sir, Brother James.
That report, there are, according to the report I'm looking at, there are nearly 44,000 people on probation in Alabama, while Alabama has 48% more individuals in prison per 100,000 people than the rest of the United States.
My goodness. My goodness. Wow. Thank you for that, brother. Yes, sir.
Brother James, in Birmingham, we were talking to some young brothers, and we were talking to some of the probation officers. And we asked the question, we asked them, how long does the average two-year probation last? And usually you are given a probation term of 2 years. In Birmingham, the average two-year probation lasts for 10 years. So you are caught in the system on a two-year probation stand for 10 years because, you know, reoccurrence of new offenses and different things like that, and paying the fine off. The fine is, the probation is not terminated until the fine is completed. So as you get catch case after case after case, it prolongs the initial probation.
Wow. Brother Maurice, you were saying something earlier about those that may get out because of lack of funding earlier.
Yes, sir.
You remember can you explain that a little bit?
Yes, sir. I mean, probably Brother James would be better fitted to talk about that, because a couple of weeks ago we hosted a town hall meeting in Birmingham, Alabama, where we had our national student prison reform minister, Brother Abdullah Muhammad, and there's a vote coming up in Alabama that is very, very, very key, and it's a referendum vote that there will be an allotment of funds that will, and if I'm not mistaken, that allotment is in the neighborhood of about $5 billion altogether, and they are seeking to seep it out rather than giving in a big lump sum. They want to have it in phases so that it's a few hundred million here, a few hundred million there. But the primary point of it is that there will be funding. There will be a choice, and our people will have to make a choice in that funding pool. Do they want to fund Medicaid and schools, or do they want to fund prison?
Okay.
And that's going to be a very, very strong that's going to be a very, very strong vote when it comes through.
Okay. Well, needless to say, the black man and woman in Alabama is really under attack, and that's to be light about it.
Right.
Brother James, let me ask you a question, brother. What are you doing as the student prison reform minister of the state of Alabama? Can you tell us a little bit about your work?
Yes, sir. As of right now, there are 16 state prisons in the state of Alabama with two federal prisons. We try to service as many prisons as we can with the help of brothers like Brother Maurice, Brother Edgar, Muhammad that services three prisons in East Alabama. And what we do is we try to service all of the prisons. We spend a lot of money, mostly it's our personal money, other than donations that come in. We go into the camps. I try to do 8 to 10 camps a month. What we do then, we go in and we hold spiritual services and even have personal classes outside of spiritual services that deal with mental health. In that, we try to order books, different various books from the Nation of Islam or other books of help and guidance for the brothers and sisters. We try to take tapes of DVDs and CDs in to service them while we're not there.
Well, let me understand. You mean to tell me that they don't mind the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the prisons of Alabama?
No, sir, not at the moment. There's opposition with officers and certain ones that don't like the numbers that come out to our programs, and certain people that, I guess because of religious, their religious affiliation, they don't like the fact that when we come out, sometimes 200 to 300 people come out to one program. So
praise is due to Allah.
The biggest help that we have is the Final Call newspaper.
How are we doing with the Final Call inside the prisons? Are we making great strides with the Final Call newspaper in the prisons in Alabama?
Yes, sir. Right now we have more subscriptions now than we've had in the last 4 years, but we only have a little bit over 100 Final Call subscriptions. And what we try to do is every 3 months we have to go on a subscription drive, and we're in the middle of a subscription drive now in the month of September. The subscriptions generally range from $6, which gives them a 3-month subscription. And once the paper goes into the prison, that is the number one minister, one in the Nation of Islam, other than Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in the prison. So when we're not there, literally one newspaper may feed 10 people in the course of. So even though we have maybe 100 going in, really about 1,000 people are reading those 100 newspapers that are going in throughout the 16 prisons. So now we're just in need of more donations to get more subscriptions.
Can you give us the information on how we can help with that Final Call?
Yes, sir. For those that want to help with the Final Call newspaper, if you would like to send a donation, you can send your donation to James Muhammad at P.O. Box 9501, Birmingham, Alabama, 35220. And that's James Muhammad at P.O. Box 9501. Birmingham, Alabama. Zip code is 35220, or you can contact me and we can set up another way, either through Western Union or PayPal. And my phone number is area code 256-452-7056.
And again, that's 256-452-7056. Email me for more information at jamesmohammed13@gmail.com. That's jamesmohammed13@gmail.com.
Thank you, brother. And we'll have you do that again before the show goes off the air tonight. This is very, very important, brother. This is what we call on the front line tonight. These are conversations that we're not having. You're not going to read about this in the newspapers. You're not going to see this on TV. And so I'm thankful to Allah to have both you soldiers on the line tonight. Let me ask another question of both of you, and both of you can respond. How can the Commonwealth people help in this situation with this epidemic? Because here's my concern. Not only do you have this amount of people incarcerated and on parole and probation, but what about their families? These are men and women that have children. They're sons and daughters of some parent. They have aunts, uncles. The effect that it must be having on the family to see that. So it's not just you on lockdown when you go to jail or go to prison. Your whole family becomes involved.
That's right.
You know what I mean? So what can we do? What can the Commonwealth do, brothers, that can help out with this situation? Because this is an epidemic that it's going to take a nation of. It's going to take the whole village to help out with this situation. Can you give us some solutions and some ideas on what we can do as the Commonwealth?
Yes, sir, brother. What I'm dealing with now and with the help of Brother Maurice is one, I see a lot of fathers and sons in prison. You see uncles and nephews in prisons. You see brothers and brothers in prison, sisters and sisters in prison. And what that does affect the family and it affects the community. With so many black men incarcerated, that means that there are less men in the community. So our community don't have any father figures in front of them. They may have male figures, but not father figures. So it leaves our daughters and women in the community unprotected. What we're doing now in Birmingham, Alabama, at Muhammad's Mosque number 69, student minister, Tremaine Muhammad is the student minister there. But what we're doing is we're trying to set up different phases of the prison reform department to where we can reach out not only to the inmates that are incarcerated, but now starting this month, we're starting to reach out to the families more. Because we want to ask them, one, to help us take care of their loved ones that are incarcerated, but we also want to ask them how can we help them, the sons and the daughters of those that are incarcerated. As the youth, there's over 7,000 in the state of Alabama that's under the age of 24 that is incarcerated. So some of them, you know, imagine even if 1,000 of them left home, they left babies at home. So what we're wanting to do in the third phase of this program that we're doing with the prison department is we want to reunite the family members with their children at home so that they can start back writing letters home to their children, helping with homework, help their sons, guide their sons and daughters while they're incarcerated, as well as the mothers. We want to reach out to the mothers of these children to let them know that everything is going to be all right, but we need their help in helping us help their son. Right now we're involved in the second phase of what we're doing in the prison reform department in Alabama is we're going to reach out on November the 3rd. I believe it's Mount Zion Church in West End. We're going to meet at one of the ministers' church that Brother Maurice knows of. We're going to ask all the ministers in the state of Alabama or in Birmingham to come out to this meeting. Not only do we want them to come out, we want every community leader to come out. If you're a Kappa, a Delta, a Sigma, it don't matter what you are. If you have a community, we need for you to come out because we want you to start a prison reform department inside of your circle. That way, not just the Nation of Islam going into the prisons to reunite with our people, but we have all of the community going back into the prison to reunite with our people so that those that are incarcerated can see that there is help for them, and then they can in turn turn their children or the loved ones that they're left at home and show them where there's some help for them at, not only helping them with attorneys and helping them with study,
helping their children with school and helping them with college education and tuition, those things. We want to unite the communities on November the 3rd, which is, that's the second phase of what we're trying to do in Alabama, because when the men are gone, there's no protection in the community. There's no fatherhood in the community. And so the children grow up and they run wild. And that's why the youth are going to prison now, because they don't have a father figure to teach them how to get a job and how to do for themselves.
Right. Wow. Brother Maurice, you want to add anything?
Well, I guess the only thing that I could add to that is in 1995, as one of the co-tenants of the Million Man March, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan asked men to join organizations, be a part of something. And it is so key, because as the brothers, as I hear you doing the booths on the street, as the brother, when men stand up, you see a difference. You know, and it doesn't make a difference if it's Muslim brothers or just, but if they're men and they stand up, the community takes notice. It's just a thing that we have been given a training and a technology and a teaching on how to make good men even better. And I think if our brothers begin to join organizations, join and have those organizations have initiatives that will join on to a prison ministry, join on to some type of a mentoring organization, so that as our young boys are going through whatever they are going through, then they will have someone to help them make that decision. Just in the, because, you know, when our brothers go to jail, the first thing they say, man, I don't know what I was thinking, because we didn't have anybody there to kind of help guide us in that thought.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, Brother Vernon, do we have any questions for our brother tonight?
There are other callers on the line, but no one has their hand raised. I don't see anyone who has indicated that they want to join the discussion. If anyone does want to join the discussion, you can do so by pressing 1 on your dial pad, and I'll bring you in.
How about any of our brothers on the panel, boots on the ground? Brother George, you got anything you want, a question you may have, or Brother Gene? Oh, we got dropped.
Yeah, still on. Hold on 1 second. I think Brother George may have been muted. Let me bring him back in.
Okay.
Brother George, is that you? Are you there?
Okay.
Brother Gerard?
Yes, sir.
This is Brother Maurice. While we're waiting, I must do this, and I must commend Brother James for his effort in the prison ministry.
Absolutely.
You don't realize how many lives you touch until you're away from them. And when people come back and they say, man, I heard something you said in the prison that changed my life. And, how is Brother James? And how is this? Those brothers love Brother James, and we love Brother James, and we love the work that he's been doing.
Yes,
and,
sir.
You know, he has been a stellar example in the prisons on what to do when you get out. You report to the mosque, and we want the brothers who are listening, who've ever been in the nation. If you've ever been in the nation in prison and studied under the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, come in and put your hand to the plow, brothers, because we need your help. We need your help. We need your support, and we need your gift. So please come in and help this great mission.
All praise is due to Allah. Brother James, let me ask you a question. Do we have brothers that are incarcerated? Are they coming out and going to the mosque, or is there an abort process anywhere in there where they come out and don't report in, or how is that working out for you?
All right. Right now in Alabama, I know that in Birmingham, Montgomery has a good success rate. When brothers come out, they generally report to the mosque. As well as in Birmingham, I think that the problem is those of us that are home, we don't understand the mindset of those that are incarcerated when they come home.
Right.
So when you have a man that's been incarcerated 10 years, he get out in 2012, he went to jail in 2002, And he's been, so he don't even really know what a smartphone is.
Right.
Anything. He's 10 years older, and then the way prison is designed to break you from being a man and make you more of a boy-like person dependent on other people. So when they come home, and those of us in the mosque, in church, in the church too, they're not just the mosque, but in church, if we don't understand the mindset of a person when they come home, we treat them like they've been home the whole time, realizing that they have become desensitized to the feelings and emotion of a person when you hug them. Because in prison, you don't hug a person. You don't tell them you love them. But you walk up in church or the mosque, that's the first thing we say. Some Lincoln brother, we love you, black man. Thank you for coming to the mosque. Thank you for the sisters in the same manner. So we don't realize we could be pushing them away because they don't have any finance. Some people have been locked up 20 years. That means they went to jail in 1992. Oh, they don't have a pair of pants. They don't have a shirt, a box, toothbrush, or anything. But they come home, they try to pick up their life. Don't realize they cannot do until after they try to do it and fail in the process. Then you have that recidivism come back in where they end up going back to prison because they could not adjust.
Somebody, somebody's got to be muted out, Brother Vernon.
A couple of callers that are on the line with the hand. You want to bring any in?
Yes, sir. One second before we bring the caller in with a question. Brother, before I forget, Brother James, I think that this may be something that you might want to entertain with Brother Abdullah, and that is that when a person gets out, there should be a prison reform ministry still there waiting for them to set them aside from the mosque. In other words, years ago, we used to have what we call fruit houses. I don't know if too many people remember the FOI houses. Well, what you can do is when they come out, they can go and get reintroduced back into society with the lieutenants and the training and so forth and get them back acclimated into society because they're used to living in one world and they have to now get adapted to another world. So now there has to be an extended prison reform ministry that goes beyond just the incarcerated but those that are coming out to help them get back reacquainted into society. What do you think about that?
Yes, sir. And I think the only thing that will stop that is we just trying to get donations. That is a floor plan that has been set up. But when we don't have donations coming in to set these houses up, I think Brother Maurice at one point had a house. But in order to make it a fruit house or FOI house, it takes donations. That you can set the house up, and then you have to have the licenses to make the house legit, where the state can recognize the house, so that when people come home, they can come to that house, and then we can set jobs up for them. But without the proper funding, without the proper donation, those are things that can't take place, and we have to deal with the very basic of the inmates incarcerated, and that's just going in to visit them.
Okay. Brother Browning, you got a caller on the line that wants to make a comment or ask a question?
Yes, sir. Let me see if I can bring the caller in. Caller from 832 area code.
Assalamu alaikum, gentlemen.
Oh, wa alaikum salam. This brother's, let me introduce our beloved sister soldier, Sister Gidget Muhammad. How are you, ma'am?
I am blessed by Allah's grace, and I'm just listening, and I am just blown away with your hosting technique, Brother Jihad, and I want to welcome Brother James and Brother Maurice to Nation Building Network, and I really appreciate you brothers coming on, and I'm just an audience listener tonight, so I have a question. Being a former prison minister in the Nation of Islam right after the Million Man March myself, I want to know, have you all studied the cause of why those inmates oftentimes reoffend? And also, have we in any region, as you know of, developed a black alliance that will allow them to get funding for schools or even black business owners? owners that will allow them to work without, you know, recognizing the X on their back for being felons. Are there any programs in Alabama like that in existence today?
No, not at the moment. I think that it kind of goes back to what we were saying a few minutes ago, that without funding, there was not much that we can do. The people that do volunteer and go into prison, which is very few, we don't really have the resources to reach out like that. The reason most people go back to prison is because, one, as a pumpkin like mom has taught us before, one, they're back. So that's their first strike. Their second strike is they've been incarcerated, so they generally have a felony. And right now in the city of Birmingham, where I'm from, and Brother Maurice, there's a 12% unemployment rate. So when a man come home from prison now, or a woman come home from prison, they're not going to find a job. And without them having a job within some kind of home plan within 72 hours, they end up going back to the streets. Because most of the families that they return home to are already struggling financially. Or they return home to a home that is already broken. So that increases the recidivism of going back to prison. But as now with the new phases that we're trying to do in the prison reform department, this event that we inshallah have on November the 3rd by bringing in, that is what we want to do. We want to see if there's funding out there. Who has a connection with a college? Who has a connection with a job? And so when the people come out, if we can just turn them on to people and say, okay, we let Alabama be the floor plan, and you know, like if Maurice had a company, he can say, I'll take on five a year. Get somebody else to take on five a year, 10 a year. And then like the Sigmas and fraternities and things like that, they have scholarship monies, but we haven't made the connection with them yet. And inshallah, on November the 3rd, we'll make the connection with them so that we can get those scholarship monies for the young that are coming out, 24, 25 years old. They got their GED while they was in prison. There are no jobs for them, but maybe we can get them into a junior college somewhere. And that's something that I know Brother Maurice has worked on as well. But now, in times past, we didn't do that because there was not enough people doing prison ministry. A reform, our people were just thrown to the side. But now that the prison reform department is developing even more and growing more in the Nation of Islam, now the technology of the prison reform is growing, like with this conversation right here, town hall meeting. So now the people can say, hey, I want to help. And then they ask us, how can they help? Then we can give them the information like what you're asking, dear sister, and ask them, can they help us in that manner?
Brother James.
Beautiful.
Yes, sir.
Brother James.
Yes, sir, Brother Maurice.
Brother James, let me chime in on that one, because that was an effort that we put together down in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, a few years ago. And it was basically where we were moving toward, but it was on a very small scale. And what we did, we found an old dilapidated house that was in our community right around the block from the mosque. Mm-hmm. And a pastor Olivia Davis from Just Jesus Outreach and myself approached the owner of the home. Mm-hmm. And we said, if we can get this house up to standard, would you allow us to use it? And her mission and her dream was to have a house or a place where women could go once they're out of prison and out of detention, so that they won't have to go back to the life that put them into prison, into detention. And by Allah's grace, through the community's efforts, and this is one of the things that we have to do, we have to organize our community, because we have monies within our community. We have money. Because Jordans are at $149, and we got them on every block. We have money, but we have to be able to take that money and direct it in our communities. And just to make a long story short, we took a dilapidated 3-bedroom home, and we got donations from carpet to a big screen televisions, And we put together a budget of about $375 a month, $400 a month, right at. And we went through the communities and we asked people for $10, $15, $20 donation. And for now, for 4 years, we have a young lady who is now, who had been released from the Tuscaloosa County Jail with no money, with no resources, and she's now about to graduate summa cum laude in respiratory therapy from Shelton State College, Junior College in Tuscaloosa. And she is a resident of the Unity House. And so that Unity House, that little model, we wanted to tweak it before we began to take it on a larger scale, because we wanted the people to see what would happen if you put your dimes, your nickels, your quarters, your we asked everybody to sacrifice lunch for a day, just one day, and take that what you would have paid for your lunch, take that money and donate it to the Unity House. And we were seeing people come by and they would drop things by. And the next thing we know, now the house is flourishing by itself. And right next to the house, we cultivated and cut the land out to have a Unity garden where we would grow crops and different little whatnots there for our people, just to let them see just an exercise of what Unity, what we can do when we unite. And so, sister, if you like, you can go to the Tuscaloosa News paper and look up the Unity House, and you will see the article that was done on the Unity House. And it was a beautiful affair. So just those type of things,
yes,
the little things that we can do.
Yes,
okay.
And thank you for that information. And I'm hoping that we can kind of incorporate our black businesses together and maybe get them to invest in a house, and so that these brothers and sisters can have a place together. So that's why I was talking about forming a black alliance. And
yes,
and as you mentioned, one of you, I can't remember which one, about getting them to hire some of our brothers and sisters. So thank you for answering the question. And assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum shalom, man.
Brother Jihad, we got the you have a boots on the ground report coming in the 501 area code.
Oh, 501, that's New York. So nice to gotta name it twice. What you got, New York?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Fine, thank Allah. How you doing, Brother Reginald?
Oh, praise be to Allah. Boots
you
on
got,
the streets
you,
of New York.
Praise be to Allah. What's going on in the streets of New York, sir?
Oh, bro, we stomping them, bro. We stomping out this.
You're breaking up, but you're breaking up, Brother Reginald. Can you hear me? I think we lost him, Brother Vernon. Brother Reginald, you still there?
Yeah, I think he must have dropped off.
He must have dropped off.
As soon as he called back.
Okay. Okay. Well, what we want to do is this. This next hour, Brother Maurice and Brother James, we want to deal with the minister's got us on the street.
Oh, yes,
all
sir.
Praises due to Allah. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan got us on the street. You got to know that what we're doing right now is phase one. We escalated this thing yet. He's just shaking us up now and getting us ready, because we on the front line and we ain't going nowhere. So the next hour, what I want to talk about with you brothers, along with the questioners, is the laws and how we can challenge these laws, and Brother Maurice, how you can show us how these laws are produced. Legislators, how do they go about making these laws, and what we can do to challenge these laws? And can we find some lawyers that are willing to work pro bono, because some of these brothers are sitting up in prison that don't have to be.
That's so
see,
true.
And because what's happening is a lot of them, the devils are giving them time, because a lot of us are 85%ers. We just take on face value.
Right.
Okay, well, you did it. So I tell you what, we're going to give you a plea bargain. See,
right.
And we don't have nobody to fight and defend our people in these wicked courts. So this next hour, we want to deal with some of that, the laws. How can we challenge these laws, and how can we get some help for our people that's being railroaded into the prison system? Any questions before we take a short break? Brother Vernon, is anybody out there that has a question or a statement that they want to make?
Actually, the 501 number just came back, so let me
okay.
bring back in.
Yes, sir.
Brother from 501, you're back in.
501, you got a Negro phone, or what's going on?
Yes, sir, brother. I don't know. Commercial came on when I was trying to talk. I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
Praise be to Allah. You know, I'm back, and I'm black.
Yeah.
Boots on the street, bro. The brothers have been fired up. They out there. They doing what the minister asked. We're doing our mission as we were asked and as we should have been doing all along. We're hitting all the New York area, whether it's Mount Vernon, Yonkers, the Bronx, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Harlem, you know, all around. New Jersey is connected to New York. So, you know, Englewood, Patterson, right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how's the final call sales, black man? How we doing in New York? We pushing hard or what?
The final call is being pushed hard in New York. Yes, sir. And,
beautiful.
And I think the people are really starting to see the necessity for the final call. And
that's good.
Flower where you have all means of wickedness and debauchery in our community being exacerbated by our people, those who are not part of it or don't want to be a part of it are starting to see the necessity of the final call and its impact on themselves and their environment and why it's important. They are starting to support it wholeheartedly. And so many people, what I'm realizing, there are so many people that are trying not to get caught up in the mess that we've created in our own community. So many
right.
are caught, and they can't go anywhere. So the only recourse is to educate themselves where they are and fight from within out and start
okay.
to actually talk to those and deal with those who are causing the chaos and confusion in the right at their feet. And they
okay.
see us doing it, so I think they feel a little better about going out and doing, you know, it themselves, which is talking to the young people. You know, talking to them about taking their wickedness other places if they have to do that. You know,
okay.
talking to them about, you know, cleaning up and wanting certainly us, the FOI, to do it, you know, last week. Not this week, but last week, you know, because we do get asked the question, where have you all been?
Right.
That's a valid question, and we deal with it straight up. Listen, we can't cry about yesterday, but we can deal with what's in front of us today, you know. But then, you know, we're pointing the finger also and saying, listen, we need your help. This is not, you know, I clean up your yard and it stays clean. No, I help you clean up your yard, and you maintain it from now on. So that means your action, your environment needs to be cleaned up and stay clean, not just because the FOI is there, but because you live there and you
beautiful.
Deserve it. Yes,
beautiful.
And then I do
that's
see
right.
that.
That's
and
right.
I'm telling you, every week when we go out, be it Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or whenever, the community has they are engaging us, and they want our opinion. They want us on the scene. They want our help, and we are bringing a clear message that it does not start and end with us. It's with the FOI. It starts and ends with you right where you are. So you have
yeah.
to get up as a community and do what you need to be doing, which is cleaning ourselves up.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Beautiful, brother. Well, brother, you know, we got to have New York Brother Reginald?
Yes, sir.
We gotta have New York, brother, because you know they said New York, they used to call it the Big Apple. But
yes.
There's a story down here that Elder Rahman Muhammad tells the soldiers in the ranks here. He said the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad drove to Atlanta one time and gave him a message from Master Farah Muhammad, and that message was that Atlanta was the apple of his eye. So you got some competition on your hands, black man. Just want you to know that, brother. But
hey,
it's all
brother.
Fun, but it's all in righteous fun, brother. That's all.
You know, I remember Top Soldier returned to the essence, Brother Claude Sharif. He said, "Brother, don't bring no wolf tickets in my town, because we gonna have it, brother." You understand?
Oh, praise be to Allah, Brother George. Are you on the line? I thought he had a question because he was out there for a minute. Does anybody else have a question? Brother Vernon, do you have a comment or a question you want to ask, beloved?
Oh, brother, I'm just enjoying the conversation and the discussion.
All well, right.
Brother,
someone called me?
Yeah, it's Brother Gene, sir.
Yes, Brother Gene.
Hey,
St. Louis.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to commend the Prison Reform Ministry and let them know that their work goes without vain, because this last week I was out soldiering the Final Call newspaper on the city south side of St. Louis, and I'd taken two brothers who had just got out of prison, and when I met them on the street while I was soldiering, and one thing I do when I'm soldiering the Final Call newspaper, I'm not out selling newspaper. I'm planting the seeds in the mind of the people and talking to the people. And there were two brothers that I ran into, and these brothers, both of them had their letters in their hand. They had just got out of prison, had their letters in their hand, and wanted to ready to come to the mosque and go through process. So what I feel as a fruit of Islam, my duty is to see that those brothers get to the mosque every Sunday, see to them that they get to processing class, and I touch bases with them almost every day to, you know, call and see how they were doing, and if they need anything, they can just pick up the phone and call me. So the ministry reform is definitely working, sir, and it's definitely working, because I've taken two brothers who just got out of prison. One, 32, has spent 17 years of his life in prison, and he was 17 years old when he first went. But they coming out, and they had their letters in their hand. They were ready to go to the mosque, and my duty as a fruit of Islam is to be in people so they can keep their power.
Right.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you, Brother Gene, for that. That is good work right there, brother. And that's the purpose of being on the streets. It's not just selling the Final Call, brother. It's planting the seed, just like you said, brother. Yes, sir. Brother Maurice, are you there?
Yes, sir.
I got a question for you, brother. How are laws created or made? What constitutes, what makes a law? How did it come into existence?
Now, brother, you asked that question, and on Saturday morning, we would all sit around the television, and we'll talk about Bill. You remember the little cartoon where it talked about, I'm just a Bill. Yes, I'm only a Bill, and I'm sitting there on Capitol Hill. But
right. They
broke it down into a very elementary state. But basically, that is how a law comes into effect to adjust a normal or some type of role in the community. For instance, the law that was signed by the young lady out of Alabama by President Obama dealing with fair labor. You know, we had labor laws, but they did not deal with a certain aspect of labor, with men and women receiving the same wages or fair wages. So laws are basically created and passed so that this can be,
Hold one second, Brother Maurice. Brother Vernon, there's somebody on the line. I don't know if they're on the subway train or whatever, but can you see who that may be and mute them out, because we can't hear Brother Maurice.
Right, I'm just talking to that, dropping lines one by one. Not dropping them, but I'm muting them one by one.
Okay. I'm sorry, Brother Maurice. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. But really, the necessity of the people creates law. And basically, law is to just govern our motions and movements so that we, you know, just like we have a law of green and red, you know, when we pull up to a traffic signal and the one light is green, the other light is red, so it's commanding one to stop and one to go. Now, what would happen if both of them were green? We would have utter chaos. So
right.
Laws are basically created for that purpose, you know, to,
okay.
to kind of give some semblance of order in your society.
Well, how can we challenge laws that are, I'm coming to something. We have
okay.
a law. We have a law that is now on the books, and I think it's 35 states. I don't want to misquote, but I know it's growing. It's called
yes,
the Stand Your Ground Law.
Okay.
Now, this law states a person may use force in self-defense when there is reasonable belief of a threat without an
okay.
obligation to retreat first. In some cases, a person may use deadly force in public areas without a duty to retreat.
Yes, sir.
Now, this law is spreading like wildfire
yes,
all
sir.
Over the country now. And we're starting
mm-hmm.
to see more people being shot down due to vigilantism.
Yes, sir.
And they're using this law as a just cause for why they're doing their wickedness. For example, Trayvon Martin, which is a case now that
yes,
got swept up under the carpet, and the young soldier just been slain a few months back and already is under the carpet already. But
yes,
now there are people like Trayvon Martin's that we don't even hear about.
Sure.
That there are people who are petrified, taking their guns and saying, oh, he scared me, or he looked like he was coming toward my wife, or he looked like he was carrying a gun. And so I was in fear for my life, and I shot him and killed him.
Right.
Now,
yes,
with
sir.
A law like that, how can the people challenge the law? I mean, what rights do citizens have that can challenge laws like this? I mean, what recourse can you take?
Well, one of the things, dear brother, one of the things we have to do as a citizenry is we have to get more involved with those who represent us. Because, see, a law just doesn't pop up or pop out. It
mm.
has to go through a process. It's not like, okay, I'm gonna come up here and at the end of the show I'm going to make a law. No, it doesn't work like that. So we have to have strong communication with those who we elect and we place in position, and
mm-hmm.
so that they can tell us what's going on and what's happening. You know, and one of the things that we cannot do, and I was in my research dealing with the Stand Your Ground Law, what I found out is that there were, 30, as you said, there were about 35 states that have drafted or adopted a Stand Your Ground Law. But the first state drafted the Stand Your Ground Law in 1895.
Mm.
So it is not something that is new. It is something that is being sensationalized. Even Mr. Zimmerman's assertion of defense is just that. It's just what he said he did in order. It doesn't necessarily stand in any merit in court. This is just what he said. It's just like when we were little children and somebody said, well, why did you do that? And the first thing came out of our mouth was, cause, and basically that was the cause. That was
mm-hmm.
the reason why I did what I did, but it doesn't necessarily hold any legal merit for what is going on, because if it had served with legal merit, the case would have been dropped. We wouldn't be prosecuting. He wouldn't be on bond. He wouldn't have had his bond revoked. So right now, that's just his assertion. But what we cannot do is be sensationalized, because the Stand Your Ground law or ruling is as old as common law itself.
Mm.
It comes and is a direct descendant from the castle doctrine, where a man's home is his castle. The Stand Your Ground law primarily permeate from the household. Every one of the states that I looked at, their primary purpose for a stand your ground law is that someone could not come into your home, to your business, to where you are enjoying your family, and then dismember or take one of your members from your family. You have a right to defend your family. You have a right to defend your home. You have a right to defend, legal right, to defend that that you own in your property, but we have to use discretion.
Okay.
We cannot, if someone comes to the house and knocks on the door, we just can't blow them away because we say we're protecting our own. Equal force has to meet equal force.
That's right.
And so what is happening with the stand your ground law, it was used. Even Florida's law was passed in the 20s. So the stand your ground law is simply has been maybe revised or what they call codified, where you add on to the law, where you add different sections. And with time, that's what happens because everything evolves. Even in Alabama has evolved, and it was just what from what the minister has said. Every one of the states that I reviewed stated that the stand your ground law was a basis of a justifiable homicide.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going through the communities with a book talking about justifiable homicide.
Right.
So we have to understand that just that alone, just that particular merit of standing your ground, we have to understand what the law is. What is the basis? In law, you have a written law, and then you have what they call a spirit of the law. And the spirit of the law is how it's handled on a day-to-day basis. You know, some laws are on the book, but they are not practical, so they spoil.
Mm-hmm.
So you have spoil laws. Like here in Alabama, we just got off of the books a couple of years ago, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, that a black man and a white woman or a white man and an Asian woman couldn't get married.
Right.
In the state of Alabama. And it only passed 56-44. So it didn't pass overwhelmingly. So what I'm saying in terms of law, one of the biggest responsibilities we have in terms of understanding law is understanding the grounds in which they are made and those that make them for us.
Absolutely.
Our legislators. If we're not meeting constantly in our communities with our House of Representatives, with our city council, because the more local the politics is, the more it affects that individual.
Right.
So there are state-bound laws, and then there are federal-bound laws. But the laws that hurt us mostly are our state and our local laws. We can go in and out on the Fed, but the state and that local, those municipalities that create these different ordinances that they can concoct in their subcommittees and then bring to the city council with the vote already caught up. We already approved it outside of the chamber. So what we have to do is get more involved in that aspect of the intellectual aspect of this law. Where is that change? How are we beginning to curtail the law? How are we determining who's making our law?
Right.
So
how do we challenge that?
Sir?
How do we challenge that as citizens? Let's just take the Nation of Islam. Brother James is in the prison now. He's working in the prison system now. What can we do as Commonwealth? How can we challenge? How do we organize such a mass movement that can go in and challenge and show just cause why this law should not be adopted or done away with? For example, I'll give you one right now. Why should a person who is a felon, now since he's a felon, he has no right to defend himself in his home with a gun, okay? And in large cases, a lot of states, he can't even vote anymore. So if a person loses his representation, why should he pay taxes?
See, that's
the question that I got. Why should a person who loses his rights when tax representation or taxation without representation was considered tyranny? So if I lose my rights, as a felon, then why should I be responsible to pay any taxes?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm not being represented in certain areas no more. I don't have the right to defend myself. I don't have a right to vote. I don't even have a right to say who can represent me no more.
That's so true.
Now, see, things like that should be challenged. But, yes, sir, go ahead, Brother Maurice. I'll let you respond.
The way we challenge those is we have to begin to organize ourselves that we talk to our representatives. Because now we need to know by definition. Because, see, a guy will come in or somebody will come and knock on our door and ask for our vote, and we don't ask them for their voting record. And then when we look at, because, see, what happens when a law is passed, every representative that votes for that law is recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So who's keeping the score on who's voting for the black community?
Mm.
Do we have someone keeping the score? Can we go to our representative and say, look, we heard that you voted no for financial aid for Alabama State and Alabama A&M and Morehouse and Grambling. We heard that that's, well, I had to vote no because they weren't going to pass this, that, or the other. But why did you vote no against funding against our schools?
Mm.
So when we don't have someone keeping the score, of how the people who we are selecting to vote for us and represent us are voting on our behalf, then we're held responsible for that. We're held responsible for how politicians treat us. If you notice, they don't walk into the Jewish community and tell them what they're going to do.
Right.
The Jewish community presents to them an agenda of this is what you're going to do in order to garner our support. If you don't vote out, if you don't move our way, we don't support you. We
right.
don't vote for you. Get up out of here. But we're not doing that. We'll vote for anybody who will play a saxophone and, you know, sing the latest hymn and call it a day. So we have to be more responsible on that level because, see, laws are very deliberate. You have so many different departments and compartments that you have to go through in order to pass because a law has to go first to a subcommittee, then from a subcommittee to a planning committee, then it has to go up to a committee to constitutionality. Then it has to go on up, and then before it even meets the requirement to get into the state house, then it has to fit all of the requirements. That's why there are certain laws that have to be repealed because they don't meet constitutionality, because they were rushed through because we didn't read them, we didn't vote, or our representatives weren't even there. They were at the golf course or at a golf tournament, and they, when you look at their record, they're absent in their vote.
Mm.
These are the things that we have to look at if we want better treatment and if we want better representation, if we want the laws to figure us and to make us and reflect our views, then we have to put people in position and support those people, not just vote for them, give some money to them. To make
right.
sure that our agenda is being pushed.
Yes, sir. Brother James,
yes, sir.
What is the relationship between the prison reform ministry and the administration of the prisons in Alabama?
Right now, we seem to be, when I talk to other states, we seem to probably have the best relationship with the Department of Corrections, along once again with the help of Brother Maurice. Throughout my 11 years, we've had meetings with the head of the Department of Corrections. We've had meetings with those that deal with the chaplaincy department of the Department of Corrections. And one of the reasons that was set up, we met with them, is because if the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan wanted to come to Alabama and go into a prison, I wanted to have already set that up for him,
right,
where he can come in at any time. And because of that, because of the relationship that we built with the Department of Correction, now Brother Abdullah, the Nation of Islam student minister, national student minister with Prison Reform Department, he's actually been to Alabama and toured. He just did a tour in August. He toured 5 prisons in 4 days. And because of that relationship, now whenever a person, a sponsor, or someone in Alabama decides to go into a prison and they have not contacted the Office of Prison Reform at Muhammad's Mosque number 69, then those chaplains, because of our relationship with the administration or the DOC, they contact me as the office and ask me, do I know them and have they been trained by the Nation of Islam before the Department of Corrections could train them to allow them to come into the prison.
That's right.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Praise be to Allah. Well, brother
Dihar,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Brother James is very modest, but basically what he's saying is we ain't playing in Alabama. Brother James has been working, brother. The result and the relationship has come directly in proportion to the work that has been that has been put into our relationships. Because when we leave prisons, they're not fighting. When Brother James leaves prisons, these brothers are very tranquil and they become model prisoners. They become men of standard. And so you can't argue with that, you know.
Right.
I think it was the Commodores that said we can't lose with the stuff we use. And so
that's right.
This is what Brother James has been putting down for 10 years.
All praise is due to Allah. And that's why we had him on the show tonight, brother, because I knew of his work. And I wanted him on the show to show the example of just what it means to put boots on the ground. And that's what he does. And all praise is due to Allah, and I thank Allah much for both of you brothers. Well, let me ask a question this way. There is another law that is of great concern of mine to me because I have children, and that is a law. I don't know if you have it in Alabama, but in Georgia, it's called the Anti-Gang Terrorist Act,
yes,
which means that if there's one. If there's two or more of you,
yes,
and
sir.
one of you commits a crime, whether it's writing on the wall, graffiti, or one of you may have a joint in your pocket, they can tie on to you the gang law, which automatically adds another 3 to 5, depending upon the first charge that you got for what they got you for. Then they can add another charge, a gang law charge, which can now carry another 3 to 5, maybe 5 to 10, depending on how serious of the nature of your first crime. Is there a law like that in Alabama?
Well, yes it is, and no. Alabama has adopted a new reading of law called a companion law. And basically, there was a young brother who, the two young brothers went to rob a brother. The brother got the dime on them that they were coming, met them at the door, popped one of them in the chest, killed him. The brother that he came with to do the robbery was charged with his murder.
Mm.
Even though, and ironically, the brother that did the shooting was released based on standing your ground.
Mm.
So he had no prosecution, but the young brother that came with the brother to rob the other brother ended up being charged for the murder.
Wow.
And that was the companion law. And, you know, so, but as far as a outright gang-affiliated law, we had most of those are based for your municipality. The different cities chime in and adopt certain codes, and then they can produce certain ordinances of that sort. We have, I'm quite sure in every city in America they have something that they call a gang task force. But, you know, one of the things, and I was reading, Brother Jihad, I was reading the Georgia law, and a lot of that has to do with our perception of that, because if I'm reading the law correctly, and it talks about in definition, and that's one of the things that we have to do when we first hear, because see, all of the laws in the different states are public information. You can get a copy of every ordinance, every law, every piece of legal material that is produced by the state. It is for the taxpayer, free for them. So what we have to do is learn how to research legally and get this information. And I was looking at the definition, brother, of terrorists and gangs, and I just put up in my mind a scenario, and I, you know, and there are 15 young men with red hats with a G on it, and that G could stand for anything, but when it is on number one Selig Circle in Athens, Georgia, what do you think the call reads? And then when it's on 830 Westview Drive Southwest in Atlanta, how does the call read? See, the mm-hmm. very same thing. 15 young men out on the block with some hats on that are all red with a black G in the top of them. But that first address that I gave you, brother, is to the University of Georgia. That's where their home stadium is located. Now, how do you think that call would read out if they came on a Saturday and found 15 or 20 men dressed in red sweatshirts dressed in red hoodies with caps with a G on the top of it? What would you say they were?
Okay.
They were football fans.
They were football fans.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you okay. said the same thing on the other one, 15 young black men in sweatshirts with G's on their helmets or G's on their hats, the same call, but just give a different address.
That's right.
And see, that particular address is the home stadium of Morehouse College. Now, how do you think that call would be perceived if it came out with something on, what is it, Westview Drive versus Selig Circle? See, a lot of it is perception. It's the same
right.
when we start looking at the definition of the law. It is all the same, but it is our perspective and our view on that law, on how it is projecting to those people. See, the definitions would be the same, but the interpretation would be different according to his address.
And how do you fight that, beloved?
The same way, dear brother. The way we fight it from the nation perspective, because see, sometimes there's a different mindset on Westview than it is on Cleveland. So what we have to do is we have to make sure that our people are as in love with themselves is that they, as they have been with their circumstance.
Right.
See, we've got to love our people past our circumstance into their potential.
That's
see,
right.
we can't, you know, and the minister has taken a lot of that fear away from us because, you know, brothers keep saying when we got boots on the ground and we've gone places we've never been before. Why? Our people have been there. So why are we just not getting there? Because we had a certain degree of fear. We had a certain degree of trepidation to even deal with our people because we have to build up that point of love that we can go to our people and say, hey, we understand. So Westview Drive ain't that bad to me.
Mm-hmm. And so how is it? Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir.
And I was about to say, once they see that we're loving them and we have, you know, as the final call reads, there is hope for them, then they'll begin to see it in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the call at Siglett will be the same call at Westview because the mindset of the people is one of self-love.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. Brother James, can we get that address again on how we can get to help you with the final call going into the prisons? Can you give us that again? I don't want to run out of time and forget. Yes, sir.
And so the address, so you can send donations. We're working on setting an account under Muhammad's Mosque number 69, but you can send them money orders or whatever you want to send to James Muhammad at P.O. Box 9501, Birmingham, B-I-R-M-I-G, M-I-N-G-H-A-M, Alabama, at 35220. Or you can give me a call at area code 256-452-7056. That's 256-452-7056. Or you can send me an email that we can really conversate and send more information out to you at jamesmohammed13@gmail.com.
All praises due to Allah. We're out on the front lines with the fruit of Islam tonight. Is there anybody on the line, Brother Vernon, that would like to make a comment or have a question for our brothers tonight?
Yes, sir.
We have some.
Who's that, Brother George?
Yes, sir, Brother George.
Audience, we've got lots of people who are on the line. Everybody,
okay.
Mic is open now, is listening, and nobody has indicated that they want to join the conversation, but feel free to press 1 on your phone if you want to join the conversation.
Go ahead, Brother George.
Yes, sir. The question is to Brother James, and I wanted to know if there was any effort to create maybe a system of information or a syllabus, if you will, that comprised all of these many laws or a great comprisal of these laws that might be accessible to the community in a way that it would be all binded up in maybe a binder or something, because I know that people use the internet and some use different forms of information, but the very individuals who need it the most, who need to understand the laws the most, I was thinking and wondering if there was any kind of effort being made with maybe a syllabus or maybe some kind of audio or a video that maybe those who might not be as read as many of us are might be able to ascertain this information, because it appears to me that it is being the breaking and the manipulation of the law is being manipulated based on the enemy knowing that there's a great dumbing down of our people.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go on a binge to educate or on an information barrage on the enemy, then I think that that might be some way that it may be a powerful tool that might be able to quell some of these problems that we have in our community resulting from the ignorance of the law. I wanted to know what you have to say about that.
Sir, at the moment, there's nothing like that taking place. I'm learning a lot from Brother Maurice. I think that that's something that I would get with Brother Maurice and see how we can incorporate something like that in the many phases. Every 3 months, we're trying to do something to educate our people, and that's what the town hall meeting was about that we had, was to educate our people about the prison reform department, to educate them about the House bill that they're voting on September the 18th, to vote them on the mental health of the inmates while they're in prison, and their mental health when they come home. Most of our people, you know, like always, we don't cry. We don't start crying if something happened to us. So most of them don't even care about the law until someone in their family is subjected to the law. I think Brother Maurice said that all the information can be accessed, but I will get with Brother Maurice and we'll sit down and see maybe there are just some common laws that we can get a hold to that we can put out there for our people as we invite them out to these different town hall style meetings. But once again, when we do stuff like that, those things aren't free. They require donations. They require financial funds to come in. So as Brother Maurice has family, I have family, and we're trying to use our spare time to take care of those things. Those things still cost money for paper, DVDs, or CDs. So we're still in need of finances for all the suggestions that are coming in.
Okay. Is there anybody else that? Oh, yes, I'm great, Brother George. I'm sorry.
No, I was just thanking the brother for his insight, because I think it's very prevalent. It's a very prevalent mindset in our people that we don't really understand how the prison system's problems feed into exacerbating and amplifying the problems in our community, because we don't realize that the problems are locked into the prison system. Because if we look at the fact that many, I would say maybe at least a third of the individuals who are in prison for something that they did not do. So this means that they know this, and that's a that would be a very powerful avenue for the enemy to utilize in order to facilitate our brothers and sisters into a straight-up slave operation, because they would take them straight from the street, straight into the penal system, and then give them hard labor. So then that would help. That would help the industry and help all of these different Fortune 5 companies that are secretively, many of them, utilizing the labor of the prisoners. On some in some cases, I've heard where there was some telemarketing being done, and they were utilizing the prisoners in order to do some telemarketing. And people have no idea that they were speaking to a prisoner who they were utilizing his services to do telemarketing. So it's just they're making a warehouse effort out of the penal system. They're utilizing it for big business. So I just wanted to make it a segment.
So true. Beautiful, beautiful. Anybody else got any questions or statements?
Yes, sir. Brother, I had a statement from Brother George. He asked, what could we do on a local basis? I would suggest, because laws are usually very unique to your area, I would suggest that we begin to stimulate our Ministry of Justice in our different mosques with our nine ministries. I think the nine ministries can assist us in that particular regard and in that particular endeavor, because
we will have
a group of people that will focus on just those things, you know, because I'm quite sure the other laborers have so much to do. But if you get a focus group that are focusing on laws and law changes and legislations in our different state, in our different cities, because you'll be surprised, dear brother, how the city ordinances can affect legally a lot of things that go on.
Brother, you're absolutely right, Brother Maurice, and that's why I had both you and Brother James come on together, because I wanted to show the validity between the two, between the prison reform and the justice system. They both go together. See, and one of the things I was talking to the former prison reform minister, former Southern Regional Prison Reform Minister, Brother Bateen Muhammad in Atlanta, Georgia, when he was the prison reform, I had showed him a slight proposal where you would have, for the prison reform, you would set up a council. So it's not just a prison reform minister, but on that prison reform, you got an investigator, you got a lawyer. See, you got these different factions that can be on the prison reform council, because number one, when you go into the criminal justice system, it is always proper to have somebody to speak their language. So you have a lawyer, see, that can go in there and speak the language of the warden or the correction officers or the police officers or whatever. So the prison reform ministry, we was talking about how it has to grow now. It has to actually become an entity where you have different groups. You have another outreach minister in there, someone that deals with the family members of the loved ones in prison. See, and all of these different things. You have somebody that can go and talk into a courtroom, that can as an investigator, somebody that can help, because a lot of times these brothers are being railroaded. These sisters are being railroaded, and there's no one there, and before you know it, they're thinking about they're going to get 100 years, so I might as well cop a plea.
Right.
See?
Yeah.
And they wind up copping a plea and wind up doing about 100 years on probation, and if you violate that probation, you're going anyway.
Right.
And so the prison reform has to now become a power base where, like Brother Maurice was saying, if you can take the nine ministries and how they can all work together, the justice system and the prison reform should be working hand in glove.
Sure.
Because they both go together.
Right.
So that was one of the reasons why I had Brother Maurice come on along with Brother James to show the relationship between the two, that when you get both those two working together, you can get a lot of things done.
Right.
You can get a lot of things done. Hey, did anybody have a question? Because I got one more final question before we got about 15 minutes, and I don't want to go over. I want to stay disciplined, obedient to the time. Does anybody have a statement, Brother Vernon, or a question out there that they might want to ask the brothers?
Yes, sir, Brother. There's one more. Sister Gidget actually has a question, so I just brought her in. Go ahead, Sister Gidget.
Hey, y'all, it's me again.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to tell y'all, if you can, whenever you get the opportunity, to look at the statistics and the records of the state of California, because this is the direction that the national, I guess you call them congressmen or whoever, are looking at. 100% of all of the black males in California that have chosen to go to trial on a drug conviction have been convicted. Not only have they been convicted, but they have been sentenced to life in prison. Now, I don't know what life in prison is in California. I know in Texas, life, you know, you can do 20 flat and come up, maybe, depending on what your jacket looks like at the end of the day. But this is what a lot of states are moving towards. So if you could, brothers, you know, in the future, examine how they are bringing that into play, because this is just another process that they're using to eradicate the black man out of the population of this nation. And, you know, it's all by design. And I just wanted to mention that, because, Brother Jihad, I know I didn't give you that statistic about California, but 100% of them are convicted, whether it's a little evidence or whether it's a mound of evidence, and the sentence is life.
Wow. Sister Gidget, before we go, we have a few minutes. Can you give us a preview of your show on Thursday?
I would only give a preview if Brother Morris and Brother James come back. No, my show on Thursday is called When a Man Loves a Woman. And before you get any ideas, you know, I created that show because, you know, oftentimes we misunderstand our brothers as MGT, and oftentimes we see you soldiering, we see you standing post, and y'all looking serious, and y'all not smiling, and we want the world to know that, you know, yes, our brothers are soldiers, but they are loving men, and we just want the brothers to come on and express their love for the sisters, whether it be your friend, your cousin, your niece, your mother, your grandmother, your wife, your courtship mate, your fiance, or whatever. We're going to have poetry read. It's going to be fun. And so it's not something you got to hang around for all night, but you can come in and just share some love with the sisters for another sister. That's all that's about.
Is Student Minister Jamil going to be co-hosting with you that night?
Absolutely. I have Minister Jamil. I have Brother Rakim. I have Brother Everett Webb. He's going to read some poetry. I have brothers from all over the nation. I'm a Brother Marcus out of Atlanta. Brother, they call him Brother Marcus Peace, Brother Student Minister Marcus Muhammad.
Oh, yeah, we know Brother Marcus.
Yeah, we're going to be brothers from everywhere, including Brother Jihad, and our engineer tonight, Brother Vernon, is going to stop by. So we're going to have plenty of brothers on there, so you all will be in good company if you decide to join us.
Praise be to the Lord.
That's Thursday night at 8 p.m. Central.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Thank you, ma'am. I had to get
in
there because she wanted some soldiers to represent. So I wanted her to let you hear from her herself tonight, brothers. I want to ask one more question, Brother Maurice and Brother James. If you were the governor of Alabama, with the funding that you have at your leisure, how would you handle the incarceration rates in the state of Alabama? What would you do differently, or what would you like to see done differently?
I think that the answer that what they're doing now, well, I'm going to tell you what they're doing now, then I tell you how I handled it. Senator Cam Ward of the Mountain Brook area right outside of Birmingham, they're trying to fix the laws to where for instance, there's a guy that was incarcerated. He had $10 worth of marijuana on him, but he received 20 years in prison. He was 18 years old. So what that type of being hard on crimes act has overpopulated the state of Alabama to 196%, which is the largest in the country. So those type of harsh laws is to bankrupt the Department of Corrections. What I would say, if I was in his shoes, whether I'm in the nation or not, you have to find a way to fix these laws to where the laws, you want to try to be tough on crime, but you're hurting your pocket and you're hurting the state trying to be tough on crime. So now they're tough on crime is not only including black people, but now white people who deal with methamphetamine and the meth labs, they're starting to populate the prisons as well. So it's not just hitting black people, it's hitting white males and white females as well. So what I see is what they're going to do, or if I was the governor, I would say, okay, we need to look back at these laws and see, why would I give a man that's 18, 19, 20 years old life in prison and take care of him for 40 and 50 years? Because he's not dying in prison, so now you're going into the money that is the retirement money. So I would say that they would have to look at going in to redo these laws and look at how to shorten these laws, which once they shorten them, they'll allow certain people to come out, and then that'll put more men back into the community to help govern the boys and the daughters in this community and start programs in high school and middle school to help them find little jobs at McDonald's, or to teach them about doing for themselves, or getting in touch with the churches and funding the churches. It's cheaper to fund the church with an after-school program. It's cheaper to fund a community center like the Boys Club and Girls Club with funding, so that the community and children have games and sports. Like you go into a white community, you see a brand new baseball field. They got 15 fields around them. You see brand new soccer fields, 4-5 beside each other, brand new football fields for their youth. But when you go into the black community, the black children are having practice at a park somewhere. Then we don't have baseball fields. We don't have football fields. So our children don't have any way to release their aggression as they grow up, as white children have an opportunity to release their aggression through sports. So as a governor, I would say, hey, we need to find a way to reach them in their youth, not only the black community, but now the white community is falling into poverty along with the black community. The poor whites, and the poor whites are suffering along with the black community and the Hispanic community.
with the rate of high unemployment in the state of Alabama. So, one, I would say he need to change the laws and fix those laws that are better govern the citizens of the state of Alabama. Two, I would take that funding and put it to churches and communities that are proven that they are willing to work with the community and the youth in the community. And three, we'll try to find a way to not only do we have a church on every corner, but we have an alcohol store on every corner so that we can eliminate those things in the neighborhoods where the children are and they grow up and see alcohol and take those type of businesses and put them out there on, on the highway or downtown somewhere. But we got to pull them out of the community so that we can have better parenting skills in our community, whether it's through the church, through the school, or certain community centers.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Brother Maurice, you got 3 minutes, sir.
Okay, I'm only going to take one.
Okay.
I would put most of, if I was a governor, I would deal with two issues primarily. I would deal with prevention and reenfranchising. And I would take money really to prevent crime. You have to provide certain needs. Because most people commit crimes. Most of our crime, as Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan, he said, most our sin are 95% economic.
Mm-hmm.
So most of our needs and most of our crimes are committed from perceived economic need. You know, most of our brothers in the trap because they think they're going to make some money. Not to make enough money, and when they get caught, they don't even have enough money for a lawyer. They don't have enough money for a retainer, or even to make bond in most cases. So it's not an economic advantage. And the aspect of re-enfranchising, those men that are coming out, I'm just a proponent that if you serve your time, then your slate socially and civically should be clean. If you serve your time, then you should be able to vote and be reinstated. If you serve your time, then they should not allow or should not post a law that will prevent you from using any certification that you gain as a ward as a state to benefit yourself and your family. And right now that's the way the law reads. But those are two areas that I would put my emphasis on prevention. And the way we prevent, we put money into programs that will teach children away from crime. And, you know, as Brother James talked about, the points of our extracurricular activities. But not only that, I will put them into parenting classes and parenting aspects because, you know, that's one test we don't have to study for as a pregnancy test. Anybody can pass that test, but that doesn't mean that anybody can raise a child. So at a certain point, we need to put money into learning how to parent.
Beautiful. All praises due to Allah. Brothers, you have made my night. I want to thank both you soldiers for being on the line, brother. Thank you so much for coming. I want to thank the protocol and program director, Sister Aziza Gidget Muhammad, and Brother Rakeem, the CEO of the network. And I want to thank all the FOI who are on the line, all our soldiers with the boots on the ground in New York, Brother Reginald, and St. Louis, Brother Gene, and down in the ATL, the mighty Atlanta, with Brother George Muhammad. Thank you all for being on the line tonight and being with Nation Builders. I thank you so much for coming out, brothers. This was part one of Black America on Lockdown. This was just part one. We got a crisis in our community, and the Honorable Lewis Farrakhan, I want to put my hand up and put a power fist sign up in the air and thank my leader, teacher, and guide, because if it wasn't for him, none of this would be possible. I thank my leader over and over again for putting the soldiers back on the streets, boots back on the ground, because Farrakhan called the soldiers out of the mosque back on the streets where we belong. Thank you, Brother Minister. Thank you, Brother Minister. Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar. And Brother Minister Abdul Sharif Muhammad, if you're listening, I'm coming for you, sir. We need to hear your voice on this show with the mighty fruit of Islam. Thank you all for coming out tonight. May Allah bless us all. As-salamu alaykum.
So good she won't put my tattoo on it. Bottom line is I'm you to find it. Gave you what you want. What's that? What's that? What's that? Hold up. Won't air.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.